Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here on this Tuesday morning, April the 16th, 2024, 14 minutes past the hour, 54 degrees and sunny skies, a beautiful morning here in Marion, Ohio. And I did get an alert there. Very high pollen today. So maybe that's what's going on with the voice this morning and what might be going on with so many other people out there in the listening audience. Now, again, phone lines are open, 740-751-4038. We talked about a lot in hour number one. Continued our conversation on, are people happy? Now, this was brought about by our guest yesterday, author from the New Yorker, New Yorker staff writer Adam Gopnik, who came on and discussed his new book, All That Happiness Is. And basically, we discussed achievement versus accomplishment. And I think at this point, if we do the count, two people have called in who have said they don't believe the majority of people are happy, and two people have called in and said they do believe the majority of people are happy. And again, and it's just my opinion, is that I would tend to fall into the side that believe that people probably are not, the majority of people are not happy. Now, again, that's not to say that nobody's happy. I just don't think the majority of people are happy. I don't know why they're not happy. I wish they were. I have optimism that one day maybe they'll get to happiness, but you never know. We also talked in hour number one about the 30-day window for the, I guess it was announcement from the Marion County Prosecutor's Office, in regard to City Auditor Miranda McGinnis, what was going to go on with her passing, and we still have not heard anything. I have reached out to the prosecutor's office, and we still have not heard anything in regard to Miranda. I don't know what's going to happen with that. I do remember doing the interview with Ray last month, and he said we would definitely hear something within 30 days. And it was brought up to me yesterday that 30 days had expired and we still had not heard anything. So I don't know where that's going at this particular point. But if anybody has any thoughts on that, would like to weigh in. Again, the phone lines are open, 740-751-4038. Then we went to the big thing going on out in Pleasant Township, in which Chestnut Solar is proposing a solar-powered electric generation facility, and the people in Pleasant Township are not very pleased with this. This would be 404 acres within a 562-acre project. There's a whole litany of reasons that they do not want this solar facility in their area. And they are going to have a meeting at Tri Rivers on Monday, April the 29th, to try to prevent this from happening. You know, I don't know. I don't know if people will come out for that. You know what's interesting about something like this? And here's what it makes me think. If you don't live in Pleasant Township, are you going to turn out to support this? Because how I got this information was running into people who were collecting signatures in parking lots. So it seems to me that they're trying to sway people's opinion who do not live in Pleasant Township that this thing should not be built. But I don't know, if you don't live in the township, do you care? Do you care what's going on out there? You know, it's hard to get people interested in things. So that's a whole nother thing. And then we talked a little bit about conspiracy theories. Why does everybody believe something more is going on than what is actually going on. Why is there always some kind of conspiracy behind everything? So those are the questions on the table today. And if you have any questions in regard to any of those, please feel free to give me a buzz. 740-751-4038. That's 740-751-4038. We certainly would enjoy hearing from you this morning. Hearing from the listeners, I think, is what makes this program. I think it's fascinating to have the conversations that we have had over the years and continue to have. So if there is something on your mind, give me a buzz, even if it's something that you disagree with me on. I think that's sometimes even more interesting than the people who do agree with me, because we can have a more in-depth conversation. All right. It sounds like the phones are ringing here this morning. Go ahead, caller.
I figured I'd drop you a life preserver, Scott.
Well, you know, it's one of those mornings where there wasn't much sleep last night, and I don't know if the weather's nice. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I don't know. Everybody slept in, I guess, right?
I guess. Well, you know, I think yesterday that conversation about happiness, I think that can ruffle some people's feathers. Because I think, as I said before, I think everybody wants to believe that they're happy, but I don't know if they are. And I don't think people like hearing that maybe there's an opposite opinion.
Yeah, I don't know why they'd be so touchy about it. I mean, I don't know. You just make life what you can and try to struggle through it, I guess.
Well, yes, and I think, like the conversation I was having when Sean called in earlier and when you called in yesterday, because you two were the ones who seemed to agree with me that the majority of people are not happy, I mean, I certainly think there is evidence for that.
I mean, I think the majority of people are just completely disconnected from reality. So, again, when you're disconnected, you know, can you be in some type of a stupor and think that you're, like, happy? I suppose so, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just too cynical. Maybe you're too cynical, Scott.
Well, it could be cynicism, but I just look at people and I see what their goals are. And I also hear what they say. You know, I'm actually one of those people, I guess, that actually listens to what people say. And when people are telling me that, you know, the happiest moment in their life was at this time and they wish they had done this and if they had it to do over again, they would do it differently, you know, I believe them when they say that. And, you know, that just sounds like a lot of regret to me and maybe a reason that somebody would not be happy.
So Scott Spears has zero regrets?
Oh, no, I think I have regrets. See, that's a whole nother thing, because people who say they don't have any regrets, I don't believe that.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't think it's possible to live a life and just be perfect all the time and not have anything that you regret. Now, I've heard the philosophy that I have no regrets because if I would have chosen a different path, things wouldn't have turned out the way they did. But I just can't buy that philosophy because some of the times in your life have not been happy. You know, so the decisions you made led you to a very unhappy time that I think doing it over, you probably would just, you know, kind of delete that out.
Yeah. Isn't it strange, though, when you look back and you say how significantly different your life could be had you just done one thing different, made one different decision? Do you ever think about that?
Well, I do, and you know, to some degree, that's what I was saying right before I went to Philadelphia, was that I do believe last year there were choices made around the radio station in regard to people around, and I believe that those decisions led to a lot of the good things that have happened in the last 6 to 9 months. I don't believe that was all just coincidence.
Yeah, yeah. It is. It's fascinating when you reflect, when you've lived long enough to, like, you know, make big decisions and see the end result in some of the other people that are in your life or were in your life, and they went a different path. And then you say, well, if I would have joined them, you know, this is probably where I would be. I don't know. It is interesting to reflect on that.
Have you ever looked at somebody from your past who maybe you have no connection with anymore, and you look at them and you go, you know, I just can't imagine that's where they are in their life. But then you look back and you say, well, when they were in my life, things were not always pleasant. And since they are no longer there, good things have happened. So maybe there's some correlation there.
Yeah, yeah. Or people who had great promise, and then they made a series of bad decisions in life, and then you look and you say, oh, man, look at where you're at now, you know?
But don't you think that's one of those blind spots, though, that people really don't see that?
To be able to reflect on bad decisions?
I don't think they think they make bad decisions. I think if they thought they were bad, they wouldn't make them. I think it's maybe in reflection later on in life that they see that, but I don't think they see it at the time.
Yeah, I don't think many people are reflective, like, ever. Again, I think there's a huge disconnect in reality. Because, again, so much of our, what we view as reality is completely, like, contrived and not real. You know, look at how much of our existence is digital and how many people live in a digital world, or consumption. I mean, that is what this country is. We are a nation of consumers, and that's not real, you know, especially when it's all based on, you know, fiat currency that has no value, no intrinsic value, and most people make an existence off of pushing papers around, including myself, so I'm not, like, criticizing you if you're out there, you know, doing that, because that's just where we are in this country, but yeah, I think there's a very big disconnect, and I think a lot of people are completely oblivious to it.
You know, I'm almost pretty sure that they are, because I look at these people, and I just read their body language, and I read how they look, and I also know them because I've been around them, and I know what their demons are. I know what their fears are. I know what their drawbacks are. And those just don't disappear because somebody different is in their life. And I almost feel bad for them in a way, because I don't think they ever truly get it right, which comes back to the happiness part of this, is I think if you would ask them, they would say they're happy, but I don't think it's, I don't even think they really know what happiness is.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a huge deficit in spirituality. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be religious, but just, I don't know, getting in touch with something greater than yourself and trying to obtain knowledge, I guess, and wisdom through that. And I think a lot of people are completely disconnected. So.
Well, and it comes to the point where I'm amazed by people who hold a grudge. I understand that you can be angry with people for a certain amount of time, but to hold a grudge, I mean, that takes work. And I really don't understand that. It's not like you have to be best friends with the person, but, I mean, you could say hello or post a nice comment on social media because that's the world we live in, or congratulations on something you've done. There are just some people who disappear, and I would have to believe that that is a grudge. And I think most of the time people don't even know why they have a grudge.
Well, look at the power that you know, implies in the form of the other person. You know, if you're so upset or impacted that you hold this grudge, that's just power that other person has over you. You know, the healthy option is to move on. You know, doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be best friends with them if you were friends formally. But life's too short to hold on to grudges and to give other people power like that.
Which I think, like I say, ultimately does affect your happiness. And I just have found that this has been an interesting question the last couple of days, because I rarely think we sit down and ask such simple questions of ourselves and say, well, are we really happy? I think it's a very simple but also a very deep question.
Have you ever looked at the global happiness scores by country?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you should check that out, Scott.
Who's the happy? Where is the happiest country?
Well, as of, I think, last year, and they consistently are number one or number two, it was Denmark. So the Danes are the world's happiest people.
Right. Now, I wonder what that correlates to.
There's a number of metrics in there that they, and you can, like I said, you can read the study and see what all goes into it. But I think the Danes, and then I think Iceland, so all these Norse Vikings, they're all happy.
Well, that's now, how do
America,
you...
America is going down, by the way. our happiness scores are plummeting fairly quickly.
Now, see, and that would be counterintuitive to the conversation that we've been having, in which people say that they believe the majority of people are happy.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently not so.
Apparently not.
Now, what do you make of the deadline passing for Ray Grogan to say something in regard to Auditor McGinnis?
I guess she is more important than his mother.
You know, I mean, it was a fascinating interview because he was so sure and so, I don't know what you would say. He was just so passionate about 30 days. We were definitely going to hear something. And now 30 days has passed and it has almost went to radio silence. And I don't know what could have happened, because I would think all my dealings with Ray have always been fine. So I don't know what could have happened there.
I think it's a conspiracy to even imply that there would, you know, the fact that he didn't execute his timeline, that's totally a conspiracy. I have 100% full faith in our local government officials to do only good in this world.
Well,
and what is right.
That's right, as most people do. Well, when do you think this skepticism came about, in politicians particularly?
Well, you should be skeptical of everything. You should not just accept as truth something that is told to you, especially if it's by somebody representing institutional power. So you should be analytical and question, always question. That is of paramount importance, is to always question things that you are told and to do your own research. And now you're not going to do that on every single topic that comes up, but hopefully you're doing it on the important ones, the ones that matter. And the authorities, they don't want you to question, and they will impugn you if you do question them on something that matters. And you know, that's what everybody they're and that's why our government system, I mean, we were founded as a republic, and now, you know, we're a democracy, I suppose, even though we're not really even a democracy. One of the key components of that is having a constituency that is responsible and does investigate and is analytical and logical and reasonable and rational. And if you don't have that, then you have nothing.
Well,
and that's pretty much where we're at.
Well, I mean, I'm okay with questioning. I think questioning is fine, and I think obviously we should do that. But it just seems like all politicians, by most people, seem to be painted with the same brush, and it's the brush that, You can't trust them. You can't trust a politician. Everybody's got some kind of ulterior motive. And I, unless I'm given a reason or see something to believe that that is true, I don't know that painting everybody with that same brush is a good thing to do.
Well, that's where you have to do your homework and not just accept what comes over the wire on the AP or is broadcast on CNN, Fox, or MSNBC. Because they're going to give you their official line. And even though it may vary, you know, pretty much it is consistent with one side or the other. And the intent is to manipulate people, and they may be dividing people by, you know, Republicans and Democrats and whatever. But you have to be skeptical, and you have to question things, and also realize, you know, what the two-party system is. You know, it was set up to be controlled, and it's very difficult, as we've discussed before or argued, for people to have an impact, an independent impact within those systems, because those systems are set up for control.
Well, I think that's probably true. The independents, for some reason, it seems to me that when an independent runs, the reasoning behind their run doesn't seem to be all that significant. You know, like right now, RFK Jr. is getting all this publicity. He's certainly the biggest independent name out there running for president. And, you know, I get his bulletins just like I get Trump's bulletins and I get Biden's bulletins. And some of the stuff he says in his bulletins are it's just odd.
Like it's, what?
Well, I mean, he talks about being refused Secret Service protection and things of that nature, and I'm not sure why he's requesting this or why he feels he should be given it. And I mean, I think picking your highest donor, the person who's given you the most money, as your vice presidential candidate, I think that's a little strange. And
so you don't think, so you're saying that he wasn't refused Secret Service protection?
Well, I think he says he was. I think that's what the...
So do you think that's truthful?
I think it's truthful.
Was denied.
As far as I know, until I'm led to believe otherwise, I'll go along and say that, yes, you know, it is true, but I don't know what the story is there. I'm not sure why is that a big thing?
Well, the man's father was murdered.
Well, right, but
his uncle was murdered. Most likely by operatives of our government. So I think the fact that he, you know, sees that and says, hey, wait a minute, you know, if I challenge some of these institutions, like, you know, I could end up the same way. Maybe I should try to get Secret Service protection. And then they deny him, you know. So then he has to spend money on the private security, because I saw an interview with him where he was talking about the death threats that he gets, and I think somebody broke into one of his places that he was at or whatever. So, you know, there's a lot of crazy people out there, and then, you know, you don't know what the power system, you know, if he is viewed as a genuine threat, what they might do, you know?
Well,
and
I
again,
mean,
you've got to look at what the recent history, the 60s itself, look at how many assassinations there were. And to accept, like, oh, it was just Oswald. Okay, you know, nobody believes that. And why didn't they, when it was set to declassify, you know, they continued the classification. And Trump said that he would let it all out there. Well, he didn't. And he didn't push the matter. And then they wanted, I think, put it out until, like, what, 2030 now, and they'll kick the can down the road again, because it would implicate people in power.
Well, what I think with RFK, I mean, yes, certainly his father was killed, and yes, certainly his uncle was killed.
They haven't.
But, you know, his uncle Teddy was not killed. And
Ted went along with everything.
Well, but he ran for
Ted
president.
Kennedy was a I mean, he was. Plus, he was compromised. You know, that's the other thing. They get people who are compromised, and then they're able to manipulate them. And you know, look at like I said, Speaker Johnson does a 180 on the FISA court. You know, his position on that, or whether or not they need to get a warrant from a judge and give people due process, constitutional protections, American citizens. And he was all in favor of letting that expire before he became Speaker. And then what does he do? He casts the deciding vote on it and does a complete flip-flop 180 on it. And then when he was asked about it, and some of the other positions he's taken once he got the Speaker position, he says, oh, well, now I have more information in this, so I've changed my mind. Okay, well, that's very convenient, you know.
Well, but don't you think that's why there is no compromise now? Because people can't just say that they've changed their mind or they're working with the other side, because if you're working with the other side, then you're betraying your side. I would imagine in the world of social media and in the world of 24-hour news, it's very, very difficult to run a government when you've got no compromise, because obviously you have different sides and different opinions from different people. And if you're not allowed to change your opinion or alter your opinion to get something done without being chastised by your own group, then I don't think anything's ever going to get done.
But Scott, it's such a fundamental shift. It's not, oh, well, we're just going to, compromise a little bit here and then we'll get this. No, it's always the impact is less freedom for you, more power for them. And that's what happens, 100%. Spending, same thing. You know, oh, well, I'm a big fiscal conservative and, you know, I want to go in here and then when they get in office or they get some power position within government, then they're number one, you know, just spend, you know, never fails. So I don't know. And to say, why does that happen? Well, probably because, you know, they have been compromised in some way, you know, just like when you look back at Obamacare, you know, I watched oral arguments, you know, pretty much every day on that. And, you know, I was convinced from a legal standpoint, because it can't be a penalty and a tax at the same time, you know, it was the argument back then. So I'm like, okay, it's going to be struck down. Well, it was. And John Roberts, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, you know, he wrote an opinion. So it was going to be struck down. Well, then he changed, right, like a day or two before. And why would you do that?
Well, see, but that is interesting to me, because this comes back to the conspiracy theory conversation that we were having earlier. Because now, much like with let's take the John Roberts situation there. Now, some people might say he just changed his mind because maybe more information came his way. He changed his mind because eventually he felt that that was not the right way to go. And certainly people on the Supreme Court we know now really are not looking at legal precedent. What they're really looking at is what they think, pretty much. What do they think this should be? And also, I would say that the fact that we always know this stuff, that he was feeling one way, I don't even think we should know that, because that just, and I'm not even sure how we know that. I'm not, where do these
leaks? Because he wrote an opinion. They have the Supreme Court law clerks are the ones that are doing, you know, their work. It was changed.
Right, but who releases
that? After oral arguments and after everything was set to be released, and then Justice Kennedy, when he found out, like, he confronted him and said, you know, how can you do this? You completely change your opinion and right at the last minute?
Well, I guess that's Mike, but why would you release that? And how would you know that? I mean, what law clerk went to Justice Kennedy and said, listen, he's changed his position on this completely, and here's the oral argument and that was completely different than the one he's going to give? And then why would Justice Kennedy, or whoever released it to the public, however it got there, go ahead and do that?
Because it switched the outcome of the case.
It did, but, I mean, it's too late now, and it was done before the time that it had to be done.
But there again, Scott, that the implication, we don't have all the intelligence to say, like, exactly what happened and why, but on key, and that's not just the only case, I mean, there's many cases. So you say, okay, somebody that is allegedly a staunch conservative, an originalist, why would they completely go against that, you know? And you can say, oh, well, you know, they wanted to compromise, or this was their opinion on this matter or whatever. Well, it goes contrary to every single thing that they stood for before they got in that position. And it's not just Roberts. It's not, you know, you name the politician. That's what happens. So then you look and you say, okay, well, you know, we have all these intelligence powers, you know, you don't, and they're spying on everybody, you know, just like with the FISA stuff, you don't even need to get a warrant anymore. And all this, you know, you don't think that they know every single thing about these powerful people? And if they do know it, you don't think that they're using it?
Well,
I mean, that's just naive to say, like, oh no, like, they have this information on everybody, but it's not right to use it. No,
well,
they'll do whatever they can to preserve and maintain power.
But what it makes me think of is the J. Edgar Hoover days, because they say that J. Edgar Hoover knew everything about every powerful politician in Washington, and that's why he was able to keep his job long past retirement age, because any time anybody would want to get rid of him, he just showed them the goods on them. And that was that. But then you go down the way a little ways, and nobody ever found those documents when he died. But then we write that, we go, well, his secretary was ordered to shred those documents when he died. But now, wait, now this was a man who leveraged those documents for 40 to 50 years. Now, why would he care when he's dead if they were shredded or not? It wasn't going to send him to jail, and it would just make those politicians look bad. And then you got to go to the idea of, while J. Edgar Hoover was the head of the FBI, who was tipping off the reporters, which led to the removal of Nixon? It was his second in command, Mark Felt, who felt he was going to be put in charge of the FBI. So I don't know if any of this stuff really is truth or not, because it always seems like just when we're about find out the stuff, it is either destroyed or dusted away, or the person dies or something like that. And I think, well, how could you not know Mark Felt was talking in Washington, D.C. in parking garages to the Washington Post? I'm sure Nixon had people looking.
Well, who's going to publish it? And even if you get it published or you get it out there, you know, you're going to subject yourself to attacks. I mean, again, we Americans are funny. They accept all these wild narratives, like in movies, you know, spy movies or intrigue or whatever. They'll accept that, but they, for whatever reason, they think that reality is like Mayberry, or, you know, there isn't that institutional corruption that goes on, like, all the time. And they don't see people being motivated by, like, power and control. And that's just, it's crazy to me that people, like, don't think that that happens. You got the most powerful country in the world in many respects, you know, declining power in many other respects, an almost perfect surveillance state. I mean, everybody does everything, you know, electronically. You know, your life and everything is completely documented. I mean, every telephone call, every text message, email, somewhere it's being monitored. Now, whether or not by a human or by some algorithm, but you have that complete system, and you don't think that people are using that information in order to maintain their power and their control. I mean, that's just completely naive to me. If people don't realize that.
Well, I guess what I see, here's the problem that I always have, is when somebody goes, this person is all powerful and they're a part of this government conspiracy and they're helping run it and they're just embedded in it, and then it turns on them, and I think, well, now if they were all powerful and they were part of it and they knew what was going on, then why is it turning on them? Because they certainly would not be for that. And everybody I know of who has had some kind of power, certainly in the last 10 to 15 years, have all faced their moments where things were brought up against them that they would not have liked to have brought up against them, I'm sure. I guess I'm not sure who this group of people who is doing the monitoring is working for.
Well, and that's the beauty of it. You know, the people that are pulling the strings, you know, you're not going to, they're going to be off in the shadows.
See, that's the problem.
It's going to be the puppets, and they don't care about the puppets. You know, they really don't. So, you know, and if you have any way of potentially implicating them, you know, you're not going to get it in the media. And if it's a genuine threat, then they'll liquidate that threat. I mean, just look at Epstein. You know, Epstein wasn't, he didn't commit suicide, but that's what the media, he, you know, the guards inconspicuously left, and he committed suicide, you know. And what was all that about? Well, by all accounts, you know, it was a blackmail ring that was set up by global intelligence networks between the CIA, MI6, and Mossad. So, you know, they were bringing in all these high, you know, very powerful people, politicians, sending them off this island, and they were engaging in sexual relations with underage girls, boys, whatever you wanted. And then there you go. You've got your blackmail. So if you want this out, you know, or we can keep this hush-hush and you play ball.
Well, but then how did he get arrested in the first place? Wouldn't he be one of the people working on the inside who would not want to, would not get caught, would have been threatened by people who were going to arrest him and put him in prison that don't do that?
I think because, I mean, it's not a complete, like, not every player, you know, knows the lines of the play. They just go along with whatever their position is within that institution. So it's not like a grand conspiracy where every single person is in on it, you know. But it definitely, I think he was pretty brazen and pretty brash with some of the things that he was engaged in. And, you know, you only have to look, like, who was his wife?
Who was
his wife, Scott?
Epstein?
Yeah.
You know, I don't remember who his wife was.
Ghislaine Maxwell. And her father was a man named Robert Maxwell. Well, his real name was Hiram Benjamin Hawke, and he changed it to Robert Maxwell when he moved to England. And he was one of the, he received a state funeral in Israel because of his close connections and help building Mossad, which is Israel's intelligence agency. So, quite a coincidence, is it not, that, well, you have somebody that is highly influential in Israeli intelligence, moves to Britain, gets involved with MI6, and then his son-in-law is running this island of sexual perversion with all these rich and powerful people?
Well, but see, that leads me more to the question of, certainly Epstein would have known that, and certainly Epstein knew what he was doing, and certainly he would know that he was ticking off some very powerful people. So why, when he was being, he knew the indictment was coming, he knew he was going to prison, why didn't he just let it all out then if he knew his life was in danger? It's kind of like the OJ thing. I was having a conversation, was it yesterday, about OJ's complicated legacy. And I always say, you know, I don't know if OJ did it or not. I mean, obviously people believe what they believe, but when you start to use the idea of why did he do such careless things, why did he leave blood on his own Bronco, why did he kill them himself, he certainly had money to have other people do it, why did he drop a glove on his own property that was covered in blood of other people, why did he bump the guest house as he's trying to sneak back into his own house, why did he do all of these things, and the answer always is he didn't plan it. It was a crime of passion and in the moment. Well, if all that's true, then 31 years later, why can we still not find the murder weapon? How was he so brilliantly able to get rid of a murder weapon that he didn't even know he was going to have hours prior to this incident? That makes no sense to me. And I don't know that that's a conspiracy. I just think it's a very odd thing that happened. And I think it would lead you to believe that there was more to that story, but I don't know that there is, except for the fact that either he did it or he didn't do it. He was either set up or he wasn't set up. And I even look back at JFK. You know, we're talking, 60 years now since the assassination of JFK. And yet, now and again, you'll hear where somebody died an untimely death or somebody did this, but it's never immediate. And nobody speaks out immediately about these things. It's always years later or something of that nature. And I don't understand why nobody can ever come forward and just say, hey, I know my life's in danger. Here are the facts. This is what I know for sure. This is what happened.
Well, again, what kind of audience are you going to get, you know? Would the media cover it, or would they cover it up, you know, if somebody did step up? So then, you know, even if it's not just them, you know, what if their family is at risk? You know, there's so many ways to, you know, manipulate people into doing what you want. And again, to think that people, when it comes to power, that they wouldn't do anything they could in order to preserve power is naive. It's naive.
I think that people would do anything they could to preserve power, but I think most people are like that. I think the local people we see every day are kind of like that. They don't want to lose their income. They don't want to lose their position. They certainly don't want to fall back down the ladder, but I don't know that they're using nefarious reasoning to keep those positions.
Boy, at the local level?
Yeah. I don't even know at the state level if that's...
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, to us it does. To us it's probably one of the more important spheres. But what matters is that, you know, the elite stage of federal politics and international politics. That's what really matters. And, you know, then you throw in there, you know, the central banking system and, you know, the big corporations. And that's what matters. Everything downstream is, to them at least, for the most part, fairly inconsequential.
Well, I guess my final thought on this would be, is I don't think there's anything wrong with being skeptical. I don't think that's problematic at all. I think the problem is we connect some dots, but we never get the full out evidence on anything. And I do believe that sometimes things just happen, because I look at things and I think, you know, think of the pressure that person must have been under who never thought they were going to get caught, who ends up in prison, or a president of the United States. John Kennedy certainly wasn't the first president to be assassinated in modern times, but certainly not the first. And RFK and Martin Luther King Jr., these were very divisive figures to a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people hated them, and they got death threats on a regular basis for things that they believed. So that they had enemies, I mean, it's horribly unfortunate what happened, but that they had enemies who would try that, I mean, not shocking to me. I mean, people tried to kill Reagan. People tried to kill Ford. I mean, there were assassination attempts on them. I don't know. I think it's just, unfortunately, the nature of the way things go sometimes.
Yeah, but you need to investigate yourself. You need to question things, not just accept whatever narrative is coming out of the mainstream media or the government or whoever it is, the school system. I mean, look at the way they teach kids. You know, oh, this is the answer.
Well, you're right. I think we should.
They don't teach analytical skills or critical analysis. They don't want people to question. So they raise each of us from, you know, when we enter kindergarten.
You're listening to The Talking Place.
To listen to this authority.
The legendary star of the facts
answer
of life,
they'll
Charlotte
ask
Ray,
the,
Mrs. Garrett.
Question, and you will give the accepted answer.
Is it how much of Mrs. Garrett
else,
is in Charlotte Ray?
And it's so. it's an interesting, and we're out of time, but it's an interesting point. Thanks.
Yep. I'm not,
in
you know,
Scott Spears
Mrs.
hitting for the dugout
perfect.
Way over on.
Ridiculous. As I wrote in the book. I mean, they never let me yell at the kids or anything. Which most parents, you know, all the kids wanted a mother like Mrs. Garrett. Well, she wasn't real. Because most mothers lose their temper sometime and they get mad.